So if you've been listeners for a while, you know at Dear White Women, we love ourselves some good stats. Well, we love ourselves some facts and truth too, but we love some stats as well. And today, given the topic, we've got some really good stats for you. So did you know that?
90% of podcasts don't get past episode 3. That's 1.8 million who quit.
Of the 200,000 podcasts left, 90% will quit after 20 episodes. So that's another 180,000 gone.
To be in the top 1% of podcasts in the world, you only need to publish 21 episodes of your podcast.
So that means basically, if you're doing the math, there are 20,000 podcasters who didn't quit. And guess what? We're not quitters, friends. In fact, we're overachievers. And that's why we're celebrating 5 years of running our mouths, pushing for change, and fighting for us all.
Welcome to year 6 of the Dear White Women podcast, the show that helps white women use their privilege to uproot systemic racism without centering themselves in the process. We are your biracial Japanese and white hosts, Sarah and me, Sasha.
So, Sarah, whenever we do speaking engagements, we talk about, you know, sort of the genesis of this podcast. But can you recap that for our newer listeners who may not want to go all the way back to episode 1 or read, you know, our early show notes or whatever? And I know we did this last year around the same time, but I think we've grown a lot since then.
We totally have. For those of you who are new, though, we are, Misasha, you and I, have been best friends for over 26 years. We met as undergraduates when we were at Harvard, walking out of a racial discussion for the Half Asian People's Association, affectionately known at HAPA as HAPA. And if you'd like to know more details on that, we can discuss that at a different time. But suffice it to say, we were both critically thinking about the questions that were being asked about race and identity at that point, didn't agree with how they were framing it, and happened to meet as we were jostling shoulder to shoulder out of the room before it ended and proceeded to talk for hours afterwards. So being biracial, though, in terms of the genesis of this show, fast forward, you know, decades from that meeting, and we've been long distance best friends for a very, very long time. But I think one of the things, many of the things we had in common, but one of them was being biracial, we have both been able to float in white circles largely undetected. People see us, they don't know that there is a person of color, a woman of color in the room. You know, we're both daughters of immigrants. We hold our multiracial, multiethnic identities close to our hearts. And the real life, thoughtful conversations that you and I have had to have about our lives and the lives of our very multiethnic children were not being had in the circles where it was predominantly white people. So that's where we started having these conversations that we were having. Note that they were from different angles, right? Misasha, you're a lawyer, a litigator. You're also a historian. I am a life coach and love talking about positive psychology and what makes people thrive. But we brought all of these angles into our conversations and we decided to maybe take them public, stick a mic in front of our faces, start talking. And we did this 5 years ago. We thought we'd have like five listeners, all of them related to us. And here we are, you know, way many more people listening after that and 200 and something episodes. I don't know. I feel really, really lucky that we get to do this. So that's the genesis of our platform. Now, I have a question for you, Misasha, because you said we've been through a lot since we did this recap last year. What has been the biggest way that the podcast, that you think the podcast has evolved this last year?
I think it's because we've really told our own stories in certain ways. And I'm specifically referencing, and I feel like there is going to be no limit to the amount of times we're going to say multi-ethnic in this episode. But I think it was really because, and to back up a little bit, I think maybe in year two, we really found our voice, right? I think year one was a lot of teaching of others and of ourselves at the same time. I think year two, we really found our voice in a lot of different ways. But I think this past year was really one of self-exploration and talking to our younger selves and talking for our kids and all those sorts of things in the biracial, multiracial, multiethnic arc that we did in the fall, because I think that was really, really personal to us. I think the feedback that we received was that it was really, really deeply personal to a lot of other people who had not heard their stories told. And so I think that's not only sort of the biggest way that we evolved this year, but one of the things I'm most proud of this year. So, Sarah, Since you asked me, let me ask you now about this past year, because in a nutshell, right, it included the end of our civics and democracy arc, some really wonderful book club focused episodes over the summer, a lot, as I was just discussing, about getting loud in the biracial and multiracial, multiethnic space in the fall, and our return to asking the sort of singular question of why in a lot of different spaces, a lot of different spaces in the spring. So given all of that, right, what was your favorite episode so far this year?
Do I have to stick with just one?
Yeah.
No, that is so difficult. Okay, well, if I have to do just one, I'm going to go from my heart, because I really loved the conversation we had with Ryan Alexander Holmes, who showed up in his wise spirit and spoke from the heart. And it was exactly the conversation I needed to hear at that time. Ryan is a Black and Chinese actor who has done a lot of introspection and really offered almost like advice from, what would he be, Gen Z? Like from a younger generation to us.
I'm not going to say that, because I've already apparently like wrong generationed people before. So
I totally, but it was the thing I wanted to hear. I have so many other episodes I love, though. Can I talk about them, or should we skip?
Okay. All right.
Quickly, multiple pinch myself moments, because I totally fangirled over Skylar Baylar, right? That conversation was amazing. We have an amazing friend, Mita Malik, who is amazing. I loved the experience that we offered with the Sound Bowl healing session. And I echo everything you said about the Asian multi-ethnic identity and the pivot to why. So what about you? I'm going to ask you that same question. What was the thing that what moment for you?
Well, I'm going to give myself the grace to not limit it to just one, because
oh, cheater.
Well, I feel like you crammed in like 12 at the end, just saying. So, you know, I think for me personally, it was Alex Chester Iwata for our, like my identity, and Ryan Alexander Holmes for my children's. And I think that that was really powerful. You know, it's hard, right? Because I think pretty much all of the episodes in our biracial multi-ethnic arc were important to me for different reasons, because, you know, like I said, it was us telling our story and us telling the story of so many others like us.
I want to interrupt ourselves here for the new listeners and make the point that I am married to a white Canadian man, and I have two teenage girls who the world assumes are white. And Misasha, you're married to a Black man and have very multi-ethnic boys who are Black, Japanese, and white. So when you mentioned that about the boys, for our new listeners, I just wanted them to understand to that background as well.
Yeah, thank you for that, because that explains why Ryan Alexander Holmes was so important for my kids. And also because he and I grew up in neighboring towns. So when he talks about his experiences, I'm like, oh yeah. And it's not too different from where, you know, I live now. So I think that that plus really the why arc that we're doing right now, you know, it's my favorite question, but I think that especially in a year where a lot of what we know has been fed to us by, you know, whether it's social media or more traditional media, and we take that for granted that that is true, I think we have to keep asking ourselves why, and especially like, what are the stories that are not being covered? And I was just thinking about this because I was listening to someone talk about the concept that if you say something over and over again with conviction, right, people will believe it's true. I think this about The Big Lie, right? And it makes me think, like, if we don't keep asking why, then we're going to assume that the people who are the loudest who say the same things over and over again are speaking truth, and that we can't be okay with that.
We can just mic drop it. We're done now. Okay.
I will get off my soapbox now. I'll get back on it for some later episodes. But a few more questions before we actually do drop the mic. So I really love this question, because I was having a conversation with someone who was like, well, why don't you monetize the podcast? You know, and I think we've had this conversation a lot, both separately and together, about people who are really surprised that this is not a money-making project. And I'm like, first of all, do you know what we talk about? It's not, the dollars aren't really pouring in that respect. But also, you know, I think it is because this is something that we are doing that is so deeply personal, that it relates to a fight for humanity, right? And I don't think you can monetize that fight for humanity. And it definitely is not through like mattress ads, right? For example. So look, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and, you know, I have not yet bought a mattress from a podcast, but I'm just saying, like, that enables us to say, to have the platform to say what we want to say in the way we want to say it. So with that as the backdrop, Sarah, who do you do this podcast for, right? Given that this is for humanity writ large, right? But obviously there are personal things, because this is a lot of hours, you know, every week, or even though we've gone biweekly, like, still a lot of hours, right? To turn out this product, which is really, like, based on love. So who do you dedicate this to? Or, you know, coming back to a question that we ask a lot, what's your why right now after 5 years? Because I know we talk about it a lot, but I think it's important to go back and revisit this, because our whys sometimes shift some, although they fundamentally stay the same. So given all of that, who do you do this for and what's your why?
Every time you ask me this question, I have this response where my eyes just suddenly start watering. I don't understand what that means, but I think it taps into a deep of emotion. You know, when you pointed out that the whys can shift, there is a core part of the who do you do this for that has remained the same. Oh, try not to cry.
Well, it wouldn't be an anniversary podcast if I didn't make you cry at least once. Job done.
All right. Well, we started with the show saying that we've been best friends for 26 years. You are married to a wonderful man and you have these two amazing children who people judge because of how they look. And when I started seeing that more and more, I mean, it just became a thing that when your best friend says, and the conversations you have say, I'm worried about what's going on for my family, you do whatever the hell you can do to help, right? And I needed to learn. I didn't dive into these conversations when I was younger or was never taught these things. This was very much like a, wow, I just learned how little I actually know about some really fundamental dynamics of the world that I live in that are directly affecting people I love and the people who I love. And so I started this project with you just totally being in it for your family. Because I think selfishly, I think that's how I motivate. I think a lot of people motivate and need to understand their personal connection to it. So much as that's hard to say, I needed to find that why very close to my home, and your kids and your husband were the original why. I hope everyone finds their why and the people that they love to do that. As we've done this, we have grown and learned. Then it turned into, over the arc of the last 5 years, for myself, deconstructing the influence of an immigrant parent, of my own multiracial and multi-ethnic experience growing up. And then the more I have done this work, the more I have realized that so many of the forces at play that are expecting people to be this one narrow version, right? Like, the systems were created, I'm going to say it, even if it makes people uncomfortable, for rich white landowning men. That is what our United States was formed by and for. And I am seeing how many different types of people there are, including some very neurodivergent folks in my very close circle. And I realize that these systems that we have are stifling the well-being of many, many individuals. People, all of us know in our lives, are affected. Even if you are a woman, a white, able-bodied, healthy woman, you're affected by these systems of oppression. So I guess as I have continued to do this work, I realize that so much of it is using our voices, using our wallets, using our votes to not only focus on the root cause of anti-Black racism, but also understand that these systems ripple out and affect so many of us. And so we need to do it for all of us. I'm done crying now.
I love you.
Thank you for listening. What about you, Misasha?
Yeah, I love this question because, well, let me preface this by saying that the other day, my younger son asked me why I'm not a lawyer anymore. And I was like, well, you know, I do voting rights work and election protection. He's like, yeah, but you're not like a lawyer. Like, you don't go to work. And so you're not a lawyer. And then my older son steps in and he's like, because she's busy being a civil rights activist. And that was like the greatest gift, you know, because I think when your kids see you, right, for you, and they see the fight that you are engaged in for them, there is nothing more powerful than that. And I don't know, I don't think I would call myself a civil rights advocate or activist in the same way that he may see it. But I think that, and, you know, Sarah, we just had a conversation about this sort of right before this. Kids know, right? They know who you are. They know when your words don't match your actions. They know when you say you're fighting for everyone versus fighting for some. And so I think that to have my kids know that I'm fighting for them has always been that original why. But I think more importantly, it's that I'm not just fighting for them. I'm fighting for your kids too, Sarah. I'm fighting for everyone's kids, right? Because I think that tangentially, I'm fighting for adults as well. I'm fighting for all of humanity. But the why is we've got to work harder to dismantle the systems that have held us back, right? From realizing how we truly can be like one humanity, right? From the systems that were constructed never to benefit really anyone except Sarah, as you said, you know, rich, white, landowning men, because that's the original start of our country. That is how it has continued to this day. And so if we don't actively do things intentionally, even small things, to change that, then our children are stuck where we are. And for, I think, if you have children in your life in some way, always our hopes for our kids are that it is better for them than it was for us. And so fundamentally, it is my kids, it is your kids, it is all of our kids, right? We have to do better.
I love that. So as part of doing better, where do you see our platform going from here in year six, right? Is it more podcasts, more speaking, more all of the good stuff to counteract the total apocalypse around us at the moment? Where do you see us going?
Yeah. You know, I think that this is the year where if we're not going to get loud, and I mean, we like you and me, Sarah, but also people who believe like we do, then we really risk the chance of losing a lot. And I think the scary part is we don't even know how much that a lot is, and we might not know till much later, right? But I think that absolutely, like, are we going to still probably make people uncomfortable? Yeah. Like, and the older I get, the better I feel about that conceptually. Are we still going to encourage people to think broader than the knowledge that they were given as children, right? As to how things function for the betterment of everyone. Yeah. And like, do I know exactly how that's going to happen? Not really. But I would like to believe that we are going to continue to find those spaces to use our voices to get loud. What about you? Any thoughts there?
No, I think that's fair for this year. We've said it before, and I think we've joked that we would like to not have to say this again, but this presidential election year is the most like important presidential election in our lifetimes. And I think we need to focus whatever energy and resources we can to get loud, to hopefully influence others to also vote, to think before they vote, to have conversations with others, to really consider that the longer term implications of the decisions that we're making today. Because if we consider that Roe v. Wade was, you know, people have tried to dismantle it for 50 years and here we are, the repercussions of the campaign actually do happen. And so what are people voting for now that are going to shape the society for our kids when they're our ages? I think this is the year to do that. Do I also have dreams of being hired to continue to do speaking gigs and make sure we share our information? Yes. Do I also have longer term dreams? Probably not this year, but the year after, of writing another book? Absolutely. But I think for now, the biggest focus has to be vote. Vote well. Vote for our humanity.
I love that. You know, I think it's fitting that we're recording this on Super Tuesday. I think it's also fitting that when we think about this year and we think about the presidential primaries and, you know, what will be the presidential elections in November, we think about the importance, as we talked about a lot last year, of the down ballot races, right? Because I keep thinking about this quote that I saw from Mitch McConnell, where he was like, the strategy was never to get like laws passed, really. The strategy was never to kind of get, you know, to change hearts and minds about issues. The strategy was to stack the courts. And he did that. He did that. And I think, how do we do that? How do we counteract that, right? It comes to the Senate. It comes to the House of Representatives. It comes to your local representatives. Like, all of these races are so, so important because we have a stacked court. We have a lot of people in positions of power who feel very differently about all of us or none of us, because they're in it for, you know, themselves, or maybe themselves and a few friends, right? And so I can't echo what you said more, Sarah, than to vote even if you feel certain ways about who the candidates are, it is still so important to have your voice heard down ballot as well. So sitting it out, that silence is really hard when it comes to fighting for all of us. So on that note, I want to end with a huge thank you to our listeners, because if you're just tuning in now, or if you've been with us, you know, throughout these past 5 years, or somewhere in between, right? We could not do this without you. Keep sharing these conversations with your spheres. Keep doing those intentional things every day to make the changes that we all need to make in order to make this world better for that next generation. And, you know, I'm just going to say it one more time. Please get loud, very loud, because, I mean, obviously, I'm going to say it again, people. It's our anniversary episode. It's all of us or it's none of us. And I think we're getting closer to seeing what none of us might look like. And it is really terrifying, like sort of end of the universe, terrifying kind of level of not knowing what comes next. So I think we've got to fight even harder for all of us. Thank you so very much.
You've just listened to the Dear White Women podcast with your hosts, Sarah and me, Sasha. Yes, we're on social media. And yes, you can hire us to do talks about our book. But the biggest thing, don't forget to sign up for our newsletter to receive our free materials. Head over to dearwhitewomen.com to get on the list.